All right, getting ready for the first year podcast, episode 52. Where's my fidget toy? My fidget spinner. I've got to focus. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. And welcome. I am Jim Toronto, and this is episode 52. 1 year ago, this week. This is posting on May 15th. I believe the original first posting was May 18th, 2016. A year has passed. Unbelievable. It feels like it. No. And I've been heartened by the fact that I've been getting every so often I get a lot of Facebook reaction, and I get people reacting and saying, I just listened to your podcast about blah blah blah, and it's like 3 months ago or 8 months ago or 10 months ago. I don't even know what you're talking about. So I really appreciate you guys going over to the landing page here at WGNplus.com. On my own landing page, you go to the entertainment section, and there's a landing page for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And all 52 now, years worth of podcasts live on that landing page. So they're all there for you. As I've said many times, I believe at this point I can say with confidence and a good amount of humility that I am binge-worthy. And so by all means, go binge on an Elton Jim. What are you doing this weekend that you can't binge on an Elton Jim podcast? I don't know. I actually haven't binged yet. I should binge. We should all binge. Maybe we can have a binge fest. We'll rent out a room, and we'll all bring our laptops, and everybody have headphones on, and then everybody just, you know, play my podcasts, and we'll all just sit there, and I'll try to guess which one you're listening to, all you seven people. But anyway, thank you so much for those who do listen every week, or you're new to the podcast or not. Number 52. And so I thought for the 52nd podcast, the year broadcast podcast, that I would I've certainly tried, and I always have tried to share lots of things about who I am and what I like and what I dislike, and that's basically what the podcast is about, and some crazy goofy things that happen to me and seem to happen to me on a regular basis. And once again, I appreciate that everybody enjoys that kind of sharing and honesty. But here's one you want to know. I mean, so I'm really going to be naked in front of you here, because I'm getting down to the DNA of an Elton Jim. So you're really going to know who I am now. I have nothing left to share after this, because I'm getting down to the chromosomes, not just, you know, the outer shell here. We're getting down into the building blocks, if you will. So here's the thing. I always thought that it would be cool to take a DNA test, but, you know, it's like, oh, I don't know. Do you want to, you know, it's like $100, $89, whatever it is on some of these things. It's like, oh, I mean, I've basically been told my whole life that my dad, last name Toronto, obviously Italian with the vowel at the end, was, you know, 100% Italian, and my mom was 100% Polish. Both parents from Poland. My dad's parents both born in Italy. So 100% Italian on one side, 100% Polish on the other, making me 50-50. And so that's the way that I have viewed myself and viewed my heritage and my background. As I've said many times, I frequently have, for the most part of my life, I have identified more with my Italian side just because it is my last name. I was more influenced and with my father's side of the family in terms of just literally family and traditions and holidays and things like that. My mom's family was a little more scattered. A lot of them passed away. My grandparents, I just knew one of my grandparents, my mom's mother, my maternal grandmother. And I was about, what, I think she died in 68, so I was four. I have memories of her. Both of my fraternal grandparents died before I was born. So I only, and my mom's father died many, many years, long before I was born. So I only knew one, and I do remember her. And I often wonder, because she lived like two blocks away from us. And so when I was a little kid, I used to go to, I remember going to her house and she would babysit and we went on vacations with them. And I really think that if my grandmother had lived, say, another 10 years, I probably would have had a very different upbringing and a very different personality in terms of my Polish heritage, because I really didn't have much exposure to my Polish heritage. It was my mom. My mom was born here, but she spoke fluent Polish. She wrote Polish. She went to Polish school when she was a little girl. She was very active in the Polish community here in Chicago. She was a member of many, many Polish organizations, and she would always be on a float, on some float from some organization, and all the Polish parades on Constitution Day. She had her Polish outfit. I mean, she was very, very proud of her heritage. And she did pass that on to me. But as I said, without an older generation and a lot of family around, we went on my dad's side for, you know, your Christmases and your Easters. And so I certainly was raised with more of an Italian influence. And I look more Italian than I do Polish. So, you know, I identified more in this age where we have to identify now. I identified more Italian. But as I've gotten older, I've been looking at my, you know, from both sides. And I was like, you know, I really would like to really embrace more of my Polish side. And my mom passed away 10 years ago, but, I still have a lot of her stuff and, you know, I have a lot of her photos and I have a lot of her Polish, you know, trinkets and things that she had. So I said on her 10th anniversary, on the anniversary, 10 year anniversary of her passing, before she passed away, I cut some, she was living with us, at the end, and, I cut some of her hair in the back just to have as a keepsake. And so I've always had that hair. And so I always thought it would be kind of cool one day, even though she was not born in Poland, she was very proud of being Polish. And in her early life with her parents, they used to go back to Poland all the time to visit family. So she certainly had been to Poland many times. And I thought it would be a nice tribute for her as well as for me to learn more about my Polish heritage, to go to Poland. And I would bury her hair in Poland. So there's a little piece of her in Poland, and I think she would like that. And I would get a chance to be exposed to my Polish heritage. So my wife and I went to Krakow, or Krakow, as you say, in October. And it was just a little over a year since her 10-year anniversary of passing. And we just had an amazing time. And it was a beautiful country. It's a shame. I don't know why Poland is not more popular in terms of a tourist attraction, because it's a beautiful city. It's a historic, at least Krakow, beautiful city, beautiful country, but, you know, lots of history. The people are as nice as can be. The food is excellent. If you ever had pierogi, it's basically like a ravioli. I mean, we went to one restaurant, and my God, the pierogi, if you will, were excellent. There's gołąbki. There's a lot of different great Polish. Now, Kevin, are you Polish?
No, but my for whatever reason, my family, my mom, my grandma, they both make lumpia all the time.
Oh, really?
It's delicious.
The, yeah, the cabbage roll with the rice and the meat in there.
The meat. Yeah. So good.
Oh, so and I remember having gołąbki and pierogi and things like that. As I said, as a little kid, but as time went on, the Polish influence from me when my grandmother passed away, you know, certainly lessened. I even wonder if I would have spoke Polish. Because I remember my grandmother even teaching me some words like dupa. Dupa is her butt. So I remember that. So I wonder if I had spent more time with her. She was from Poland. I wonder if she would have taught me Polish. You know, because my mom didn't. But if I was with my grandmother a lot, maybe she would have. Who knows? Now I look back and I never really thought of. You know, I mean, I certainly knew her, and I have some memories of her. But then I think about, geez, if she had lived, and I was older, what kind of influence would she have had? That really, you know, there's a certain aspect of my life that could have potentially been very different. But anyway, so went to Krakow, just had a great time, and definitely am going back. Food was great. Some amazing churches, some great sites, the people. What was interesting about just outside of Krakow, there's this amazing salt mine. You go like 700 feet down. There's a church completely carved out of salt, underground. It's unbelievable. It's a real church. It's not just a little piece. It's not a little room. It's a huge, giant church with an altar and the 12 stations of the cross. It's crazy. It's all made of salt. It's unbelievable. The other part of the thing just outside of Krakow is the concentration camp, Auschwitz. A lot of people think of the Holocaust and Auschwitz, and you think Germany, obviously. But the fact of the matter is that Auschwitz is in Poland. And because Poland was one of the first countries that Germany invaded to start World War II. And so the Polish and the Jews and many gypsies and other nationalities were the first prisoners in Auschwitz. And there's actually two Auschwitz, which I was not aware of until I went on this tour. The first Auschwitz was actually a already built Polish barracks and armory. And so when they brought the first prisoners in there, there was no gas chambers here. This is where they lived. They were certainly, you know, worked to death. I mean, this was not a, you know, but what happened was the people that were first brought to Auschwitz I were then taken every day to build the bigger Auschwitz, which is then where they had all of the gas chambers and the ovens and everything that went on there. So it's a very sobering place to go, but I've always been intrigued by it. It is a part of our history, and the sad part is it's only 70-some years ago. It's not like this was 300 years ago. This is within a lot of people's lives, certainly within a lot of people's lifetimes. So that's what's even scarier when you think about that reality. So I was glad to go from an interesting, you know, from a personal standpoint of just interest in history. And so we're walking through. And at one point, we're walking through the first Auschwitz, and we're in these kind of barracks and in these different buildings. And there's huge pictures on the wall, giant posters of pictures blown up of all the different, you know, eras at what time, at the beginning in 1938 or 1941 and whatever this was, you know, in terms of the history of this, of the first Auschwitz. And my grandfather, my mother's father, was born in a town about 40 minutes or so outside of Krakow called Turnow, T-A-R-N-O-W, Turnow or Turnow, as they would say in Polish. And so when I'm at Auschwitz, I see this picture of trains and these prisoners getting on the train to come to Auschwitz. And the caption says, first Polish prisoners taken to Auschwitz from Turnhof. Whoa. I literally got a jolt. I've been raised to think that I am Italian and Polish. But never in my mind. I've always been interested and empathetic toward the Holocaust. But never in my mind did I ever think that I could possibly have any connection personally. Because, as I said, you always think of, you know, the Jews being, you know, the main targets of the Holocaust. But now I see that initially at Auschwitz, Polish prisoners were taken and most likely died in, who knows, if not in the, you know, the ultimate, you know, gas chambers. They certainly may have died from the slave labor that they were put in at Auschwitz or when they were building the Auschwitz II, which is known as Birkenau, which is where the ovens were. Now, I have no idea if I have any personal family because my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, I believe came to the United States in the early 1900s, maybe 1912, 1915, long before World War II. But who's to say that his entire family, I don't think, came to America. So there is a good chance that I may have had some cousins, distant cousins, or some relatives from my grandfather potentially could have been taken to Auschwitz. Well, I was really just kind of shaken by this because, as I said, I've looked at it at the entire kind of concentration camp, you know, and Holocaust experience as an outsider, as a human being, as I said before, having empathy for this terrible act, but never feeling anything personal about it because why would I? But then, of course, it struck me when I saw this Turnhof thing that, well, wait a minute, there's Polish Jews. Now, is it possible that, yes, I'm Polish, and my grandparents were born in Poland, and they were from Poland, their ancestors are from Poland, but could it be that there is some Jewish in our bloodline too? And if there was, who knows, because of World War II, perhaps that was kind of, you know the way some families are here. There's some family secrets that nobody ever knows. And then all of a sudden, when people get older, they start either forgetting it's a secret or they decide that someone should know about this in terms of history. And suddenly you find out things about your family that you never would have imagined that some people did, or this person was this, or that person did that. And whoa, where did this come from? So I'm saying to myself, hey, who knows? Maybe my mom literally didn't know if she had Jewish blood in her, a Polish Jew, because maybe her family was like, look, we don't want to say that we have Jewish blood because that could get us killed back then. Who knows? So when we came back home, I said to myself, I really want to do this DNA test now because I wonder if I do have some kind of Polish Jewish blood. Since people were taken to Auschwitz from my grandfather's town. So, you know, we went in October and the holidays go by and you always put those things off. So finally I'm like, I'm just doing this. I'm just getting online and ordering the darn kit and I'm doing this. So, in late February, I ordered one for me and my wife. And my wife has always said, oh, I'm kind of a mutt. I've got a lot of different things, you know, German, French, English, blah, blah, boop, ba, beep, ba, bop. Okay. But I said, well, let's both take one. So you get the little kit. It's very simple. Went to Ancestry.com, and I'm not getting anything. That's just the one I went. And you spit in this little thing, and you seal it up, just like on CSI. And you put it in this little thing, and they pay for the shipping and everything. It's this The hardest thing you have to do is just be able to get enough spit. If you can fill the spit up, that's the hardest thing you have to do. They do it all for you. And believe me, you think, oh, you know, what's the big deal about spitting? But, you know, you have to put enough in there. You have to reach this little marker. And my gosh, it was not that easy. I'm like, and you're spitting. I'm like, oh. And then they're like, and it can't be just the bubbles. Because when you really throw a lot of saliva in there, I never realized how many bubbles are in your saliva until you see it concentrated. But it's like, it, you know, meeting the line cannot be bubbles. It's got to be real saliva. Like, okay, so I'm, you know, getting my saliva in there. So boom, boom, boom. And they said, you know, due to all the demand, it may take, you know, 6 to 8 weeks to get your results. So, okay, by the time they physically got it, it was like May 3rd. So I said to my wife, well, sometime in May, we will get our results. Now, you know, back in March, May seemed 100 miles away. And today it's May, you know, it's past the time. So sure enough, about 6-7 weeks, get an email. Your results are in. Okay. So I opened them up. And sure enough, it for what I expected, there was mostly what I expected, but there were some interesting things that I completely never knew or thought of. So, as I said, I always grew up thinking I was 50-50. Half Italian, half Polish. So I'm thinking when I hand in my thing, that it's going to come back. Your genetic history is 50% Italian, 50% Eastern European, which includes Poland, and I figure, okay. 42% Italian, 40% Eastern European. Okay. I'm no great mathematician, but that's 82%, which means there's 18% floating around in that DNA. There's 18%, which is a pretty good percentage of your heritage, floating around. That's not what I thought it was. I'm waiting to see 50-50. And sure enough, the majority of my background, out of the 100% I thought, which was 50 and 50, Polish and Italian, I'm at 82. Pretty close, but as I said, 18%. Other. So it says other regions. I click the regions. What is the top one of the different regions? Now, once again, it's not a crazy amount. It's only 3%. But 3% Jewish. Oi! Bubala! I mean, it's not a lot. I'm just a smear of Jewish. Just a smear. But there's some Jewish there. And I'm assuming it's on the Polish side. And it's ironic because I really do embrace and enjoy things of the Jewish heritage. I've talked on this show how much I love to go to delis and pastrami sandwiches. I love a good matzo ball soup. I like, as I said, the Jewish food. I love Yiddish. I just said schmear. In fact, I have a book called The Joys of Yiddish. So if you want to talk, I wish you good nachas, my friends. What, that I can't offer you nachas? Hey, you know, if you listen to me, I always talk about the Jackie Mason. There's a person that comes here. Why do I do Jackie Mason so well? Because I can't help it. I'm like, I felt when I got this, I felt like when you ever watch the Ten Commandments movie, when Moses finds out he's Jewish, he's born of Hebrew slaves. I'm one of the guys. Bubala. 3%. It may be just a schmear, but let me just say, let my people go. 3% Jewish. So I'm like, so part of me is like, wow, that's cool, because I have Jewish friends that I enjoy talking to them about their religion. And as I said, I've embraced a lot of aspects of the Jewish culture and the Jewish religion into my own life. Hey, let me just say, one of my favorite musicals, Fiddler on the Roof. If I was a rich man, I'd eat a heat a heat a heat a heat a heat a heat a heat. But anyway, so 3% Jewish, so who knows? Now I said, wow, I actually could have had, who knows? I could have had some relatives that were taken to Auschwitz. So now I'm going to have to do a little more research, but at least I did, you know, answer the question, do I have potentially some Jewish blood? It's very small, 3%. But hey, 3% is better than 0%. This is what I said. So I'm very happy to be a Jew, even though it's I'm more Gentile than Jew. But what can I say? So 3% Jewish. If you've listened to me at all, you know how much I love England. I love Great Britain. I love London. We went there on our honeymoon. The first time I stepped in London, I felt so at home. I couldn't figure out why. I just said, I felt so natural there. When we were there for 10 days, when we left, I physically was depressed to leave. That's how much I really just felt, and I don't understand why I felt this connection. Maybe some of it had to do with the fact that I've been an Elton John fan for so much, and a lot of his music is, you know, lyrically is rooted with some English, you know, references, and I am a fan of Shakespeare, so I certainly have, you know, had, you know, some of a British influence as well. I've always watched a lot of the British, you know, movies and TV shows, but there was something about being in England, which I just felt like, wow. I actually used to call it home. Like, we got to go back home. I got to go home. 2% Great Britain. Pardon me, because I can say this, I'm a limey. It's a small amount. I can say limey because I'm one of them. So I'm not being prejudiced here. But I'm a Brit. I love my queen. God save the queen. What should we do with our queen? So now I'm at 2%. It's a crumpet. It's a scone of British. But it's there. So who knows? Is that why I felt this connection? When I've gone to Britain, I love. My goal would be to actually live there for a couple of years. I just love it there. I've got friends there and great. So 1% or 2% British. Now, I never in a million years, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, St. Patrick's Day. What are you doing for St. Patrick's Day? I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I'm Italian and Polish. I'm not into it. I mean, I understand it. It's great, but it's not my deal. Oh, really? You better rethink that, because guess who has 1% Irish? Shonan Brigora. Who would have thought that good old Jim Tarano is one of the Irishmen? I never in my world. Now my good friend Matt O'Shea and my good friend Brian Murphy, we got something in common. I always figured they were the Irishmen and I was the Italian and the Polish. But now, Aaron Gobra, my friends. So I'll have to raise a Guinness, and I'll have to now go and buy the Green River downtown and go to the Southside Irish Parade and go to the Chicago Parade and go to wherever. What's that Irish bar there, Kevin? You know him.
Which one?
I don't know. I'm asking you. I never went.
Is that even Chicago? I don't know.
Maggie
Miles.
Maggie like Miles. Maggie Miles. Maggie. Is that really?
Duke of Perth. That's one.
Oh, Duke of Perth.
Yeah, there
we go. Hey, sure, Brigada.
Chief O'Neill's.
I've been to Chief O'Neill's.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I just went there.
Yeah.
Oh, they've got the greatest. Oh, Chief O'Neill's. The greatest cheese curds you ever want to taste. Oh, my goodness. And I also had a hard cider when I was there.
Cedar.
But now I'll have to get a Guinness. But yeah, Chief O'Neill's.
It's a good spot.
Good spot. It's a weird little rectangle place, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right on Elston near Albany, I think.
Yeah, it's like northwest.
Yeah, yeah. And but yeah, they have, next time you go there, get the cheese curds.
Good to know.
Oh, sure, there we go. So now, 1% Irish. I mean, it's not even a leaf on a four-leaf clover as much Irish as I got in me. But I still got some in me. So here we are. I'm thinking I'm Italian and Polish. I got some Jewish in me. I thought I was just a Gentile, but now I'm not. I'm Jewish as well. So I've got Jewish. I've got a little Brit in me as well, sir. About 2%. It's about £4.2, if you will. But it's there, and I could feel it, and I'm glad I got it. And I'm going to keep going to England because I love it, because now I know it's my country. Right? Right. And then shoot a recorder. My Irish friends. Now I can party on St. Patrick's Day and not totally blow it off. But here's the interesting thing. And then there was actually a less than a percent of Scandinavian, which really shocked me. Although I've been to Scandinavia. But here's the thing. 10% of me. Now this one threw me for a loop. 10% of me. 7% and 3% is the breakdown. 7% of me, of my DNA, of all these chromosomes, of all these things that, when put together, create what you know as an Elton Jim. 7% of all that is Caucasus. And I say, well, what is Caucasus? What the heck is Caucasus? It is the region that includes Syria, Turkey, and that's how you say it, Turkey. I've been to Turkey, been to Istanbul, Iran, and Iraq, and Armenia, and Georgia. 7% of me. I don't know which side. I have to think from the geography of it, probably on my dad's side, since that's closer to, you know, Italy and Greece, not as close to the Slavic side. So on my dad's side, I must have this Iranian and Iraq and Syria and Armenian and Turkey. And then 3% Middle Eastern, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Yemen, and Lebanon. I'm in the thick of it. Holy smokes. Let me just say this right now. My people are not breaking the nuclear treaty. My Iranian side, we are not breaking that treaty. Just so you know that. I'm going to come out. And also, now, I guess, what can I say? Syrian people, my house is your house. My Syrian neighbors, my Syrian cousins, any refugees, come on over. Elton Jim's door is open. We're brothers now. We're brothers and sisters. Because 7%, that's not small, comes from this area that includes Iraq and Syria and Turkey, and then 3% of Middle Eastern. Wow. That was the shocker to me. I was excited to find out that, you know, I had some Jewish and some Briton and some Irish in me, but I never would have thought I had any kind of Mideast. And the funny thing is, I always say, I've been to Turkey, and it was gorgeous there. Beautiful city, Istanbul. But I've always said, and this is so weird, I've always said, I want to see the pyramids. I have been saying that for 20 years, and it's just difficult to go to that part of the world, because there's always problems, and it's always dangerous, and a lot of times it's on no-fly lists, but I have always said, I want to go to see the pyramids. Now, I understand. It's an amazing sight and an interesting thing to see. So who wouldn't want to see the pyramids? But I have had some, it's a very deep held thing. I want to see those pyramids because now I know why. My ancestors built them. There's Elton Jim blood in there. Well, now I don't know. There could be Jewish blood too. But once again, I got a smear of that too. Whoever built those pyramids, whether it was the Jewish slaves or the Middle Eastern people, I'm related to those pyramids. Even if it was the Pharaoh who said, so it shall be written, so it shall be done. Whatever. So it is ironic that there's some places and some nationalities that I have just naturally gravitated to when I had no reason to believe I had any connection to them, like the Jewish heritage or the British heritage, Irish and now Middle Eastern. That one blew me for a loop, took me for a loop. So, wow. All I could say is it was a very interesting revelation. A lot of what I expected was confirmed. Majority of who I am is Polish and Italian. But then there's these little aspects because everybody's blood is mixed from somewhere. So to find out that I had Jewish and Great Britain and Irish blood and even maybe, a little tip of, Scandinavian. But then, this Iranian. And so, I don't know. Should I become a Muslim now? I don't know. Do I wear a burqa? I don't know what I should do. But once again, I never thought when I'm watching the news or seeing this thing, think that I have anything more of a connection to some of these nationalities except for just pure human interest. And now some of the hot spots as well as some of the nationalities I have just naturally gravitated to are actually a part of my DNA makeup. So I have to say, I don't know how you feel about this, but that was the best $100 I ever spent. I shouldn't say that, but it was certainly well worth it. So if you're thinking that, if you're very proud of your heritage or whatever, or you're wondering, hey, just what am I? Who knows? I would say there's several services out there. But it's relatively inexpensive and it really can open your eyes. And then it gives you now the opportunity to figure out what do you want to do with that information? And it's up to you. You can build these family trees and you get very into it, or you just sort of say, okay, I have a better idea of who I am now and what my background is. And, it's eye opening and, it's just really interesting to find out some of these other places. So I'm just happy to say to all I always thought I was a 50-50, boom, boom, boom. I'm just as mixed as so many other people. In fact, my wife's results, she's 56% British, 56% British, and like 17% Irish, and some French in there. But she never thought she was 56% British. Which is might be a reason why I married her. Because I'm married to a British woman. I love the birds. You know what I mean? I love a English bird. What? Oh. So all I could say is my last name is Toronto. My mother's name, maiden name is Kielbasa, which means Polish in Italian. My dad used to call my mom Lori Sausage because her name was Kielbasa. Although it was shortened, is actually Kobylinski, I think was, and it was SKY, which a lot of Jewish names end with SKY. It's not SKI, like the Polish ending would be. It's SKY. So once again, that Jewish blood does make sense. But so let me just say to my Italian friends, buona sera. To my Polish friends, don't be a dupa. To my Jewish friends, let me just wish you knackers. To my British friends, how you doing there, mate? To my Irish friends, raise a Guinness. And now I have to work. I don't know. I have to work on my. I never did an Iranian. I don't know Iranian. Oh no, I did go to Turkey. I did go to Turkey. I remember our British guide said, it's not Turkey, it's Turkey. Turkey. So there, I'm Turkish and Iranian and Iraq and Syrian and then Saudi and Jordan and Yemen. Those are hot spots. Let my people go. So anyway, that's who Elton Jim is. Yes, I am a Elton John fan. I'm pretending to be a radio personality, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, Elton Jim is 42% Italian, 40% Polish, 3% Jewish, 2% Great Britain, 1% Irish, less than 1% Scandinavian, 7% Caucasus, and 3% Middle Eastern. Now, if that is not a veritable DNA smorgasbord, I don't know what is. And welcome back to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, episode 52. 1 year ago today, or this week, we started this little thing called Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and here we are 52 episodes later, and they said it wouldn't last. At least I said that. And one of our regulars on the podcast is Emily Arminetti. How you doing, Emily?
I'm good. I just had a lozenge.
That's Emily's new theme song. It's her new intro music. If you listened a couple of weeks ago before we put her on, Emily was clearing her throat and we heard it. And I am always one to...
Barely.
Oh, my God. Sounded like a truck driver. And so I'm always one to find and seize on people's mistakes and or frailties. I love to not only...
Speaking of which, I don't want to take us off piece right away.
Yeah.
But I just want to congratulate you on the worst British accent. Oh! Dick Van Dyke is very popular.
Why? I was doing Bert. Hello, Mary Poppins. Hello, Mary Poppins.
Oh, my God.
Please. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Are you kidding me? I've done British accents in plays. Are you kidding?
That is painful.
Because, you know, Emily lived in London, so she knows how they talk.
Yeah, yes, that's right. I'm a connoisseur.
Okay, you do one then.
No, I don't.
That was
don't
my cock. Are you kidding? That's a great cock. That was a great Cockney accent.
I can't do it.
Hello, sir. How you doing, sir?
It was the Dick Van Dyke Cockney accent. That's what it is.
Well, we are in the Pop Culture Club here with Emily, even though she savagely is making fun of my pristine and perfect British accent. I just was Marley's ghost at Christmas time. How could you say that? I was Marley's ghost.
Well, I was not there to witness that performance, but I did catch the end of the last one.
I'm trying to think of some of my Marley lines to do what I did.
Let's just wait till Christmas.
When I did that, I did a mix of British and Dr. Smith from Lost in Space. Oh, I bear the chains. I wore life. Anyway, so we didn't get to this last week, but we are going to get to it this time. So I was looking at my new Rolling Stone with Henry Styles. Which boy band is he from?
Harry Styles.
What did I say, Henry? You know what? I'm reading it, and I couldn't even say
he
Henry.
He's like one of the biggest pop stars in the world right now.
Oh yeah, well, okay. That's why the state of pop music is what it is. Harry Styles. I mean, this guy, what is he, like 12? I'm like, who is this?
He's a youngin.
Yeah, he really is. Is he 20?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he looks really young on the cover.
I'm going to guess he's at least drinking age. So I'm going to guess he's at least 20.
Well, in the May 4th issue of Rolling Stone, the cover story is with Harry Styles and says, "The boy band superstar comes of age." Jesus. But the story that caught my eye, which is a big feature, is the special issue is the 50 greatest concerts of the last 50 years. And so I thought it would be fun to not only go through the list of what Rolling Stone considers some of the best and most important concerts of the last 50 years, but I thought it would be fun for Emily and I to recap some of our favorite concerts of our last, you know, 30, 40 years of concert goings. I mean, I've been going to concerts.
Your last 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, my first concert was 1976. So what is that? That's 41 years. Hoofa.
Okay, well.
Hoofa. Yeah, I was 12.
Well, I think I went to my very first concert when I was 9.
Oh, really? Wow, I was 12.
I won't say what year it was.
Who did you see? Yeah. Who did you see when you were 9?
It was Duran Duran.
Wow, you saw
the Ragged Tiger tour.
Oh, you saw that band tour. Oh, God.
And I was a huge fan. I mean, I totally thought I was going to marry Simon LeBond. And you know, my family was in the liquor business, and my dad used to get he used to get tickets from like the promoters all the time.
Or
from
really? Oh, wow,
yeah,
cool.
From the sponsors, from the beer company.
Right.
So we used to always get. He used to get a lot of Skybox.
Oh, nice.
Stuff. And yeah, it was a nice perk. And so when he got Duran Duran tickets, I was all over that.
Must have been like
Mom, you have to pick.
You must have been the most popular kid in the neighborhood, right?
Oh, yeah. I got to take a friend.
Nice.
And it was, yes. And I still remember it to this day, even though I was only 9.
Yeah, well, my mom took me to see Elton. And you got to remember, too, now when you went in the, which I assume is the mid-80s, you know, that by that time, you know, moms were kind of cool. Now, my mom, when I went in 1976, for my mom to go to a rock concert, I mean, you know, that was, you know, she used to go see, you know, Benny Goodman, George, and Glenn Miller. And so I'm going to take her. I mean, and this is 1976. We go to the Chicago Stadium. Once you walk in there, it's just pure marijuana smell.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Well, because back then, I mean, don't forget, Elton was the star of the moment. So it wasn't just he was there was 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds that was it. He was the guy. So yeah, everybody was smoking pot. I mean, you walked in there and it was like, hoofa. I was getting like, I was like 12. I got a contact high just sitting there.
Right.
But so before we talk about ours, let me just go through the Rolling Stone list fairly quickly just to mention some. And it's an interesting list, and it's an interesting magazine or issue if you want to take a look at it. And they do list some of the ones that you would expect in terms of well-known acts and well-known tours. Obviously, they talk about Jimi Hendrix and when he was at Monterey in 1967, when he burned his guitar. And there's a famous picture of him on his knees with the guitar. And the Monterey Pop Fest in 1967 is actually, which will be, you know, this is, you know, I don't know what about you, Emily. Are you going to be going to San Francisco? If you do, don't forget to wear a flower in your hair.
Right.
Because this is the 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love.
I mean,
you don't really seem to care, or you're all about flowers, but clearly not into love.
Although the floral crowns are good, they're out. They're so five minutes.
And of course, in June, June 1st will be the 40th anniversary or the 50th anniversary. What am I saying? 40. It's the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love, and the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper. But the Monterey, June 1st, 1967. But the thing about the Monterey is the Monterey Pop Festival, which had the Who and Jimi Hendrix and a ton of people. That was the precursor to Woodstock. If it wasn't for the Monterey Pop Festival, there probably wouldn't have been a Woodstock. And the interesting thing is that it was held in California, whereas obviously Woodstock was held in upstate New York. And it was actually put together. The Monterey Fest was put together by John Phillips of the Mamas and Papas. So. Definitely, that's one of the big ones. They talk about Elvis's comeback special in 1968. You may have seen that. It was a big deal on television when Elvis sort of came back to his roots. He was wearing the leather jacket, and they were sitting around. He had the white suit on as well. They talk about Johnny Cash's classic 1969 concert at San Quentin, which is a great live album from there. Led Zeppelin's 1969 tour when they first hit the world stage, and The Who Live at Leeds, which is one of the great rock live albums of all time from 1970. And a little one I'm very proud of. I'm proud of Rolling Stone because they put this in there. But Elton John's debut in America, August 25th through the 30th at the Troubadour, which was the main club in L.A. where you...
Yeah, it's still there, right?
Yeah, Troubadour is still there. In fact, Guns N' Roses just played there to start their tour a few years ago. It's a small place, 300 people, but at the time, in the 70s, the Troubadour is where you went to either be discovered. That's where James Taylor played. That's where, with Carole King. A lot of people, that's where the Eagles got together. They used to be the background band for Linda Ronstadt, but they used to hang out at the Troubadour. And so Elton came from England, was not that well known in England at all, came to the Troubadour after his first show, got an amazing review in the LA Times, and became a superstar literally overnight. And so I'm glad that that Rolling Stone put that in there, because it does deserve to be in there. And then here's one that I'm sure that you may have gone to. Did you go to the Zoo TV tour by U2?
No.
When he went, remember when
we've talked, you know this. I'm not really a huge U2 fan. I've never seen them.
Yeah, well, I'm looking to see just one which ones you might go to, because most of these would have been before your time. Springsteen is there in 78. I didn't see him in 78, but I did see him in 80. That was the first time. Did you go to the 1990 Blonde Ambition tour?
You know what? I didn't. I've seen Madonna at least 3 times, but I did not see her on the Blonde Ambition.
Yeah, that one is on there. And like I said, the U2 Zoo TV when... now how about this one? Did you... Oh, no, this was specific, but have you seen Radiohead?
Yeah, I've seen Radiohead a couple times.
Yeah, well, they're talking about their
last fall.
Well, they're talking about their performance in 97 at the Glastonbury Festival.
Glastonbury.
Now, they have Leonard Cohen, who just passed away. His 2008 tour, I saw him in 2009 at the Chicago Theater. So I saw that. They've got Brian Wilson on here. I've seen him. Never saw Fish. Have you seen Fish?
Yes.
They've got the Fish tour.
I didn't follow. I mean, Fish is like the kind of band a lot of people kind of followed them for a while.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I've only seen Fish once. I'm not really like, I don't get into like the touring band scene per se, but I do like their music.
Do you remember what year you went?
When I think it was my junior year in college. So it was either the fall of 94 or the spring of 95. I can't remember.
Because they mentioned a time in 1999. So you saw them early on. So it's an interesting thing. Pink Floyd's The Wall, obviously, from 1980, when they literally built the wall around the band throughout the show, and then blew it up at the end. And I saw Roger Waters do that show in 2010, and it was really, from a production and from a theatrical standpoint, one of the coolest shows I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they literally build the wall as the concert going on. They crashed a plane into it, and I was in the second.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was in the second or third row, and they blew up the wall at the... I mean, when the second act starts, the band is completely behind the wall. You can't see the band.
Right.
They're singing Hey You, and they're behind the wall. It was just really cool. And then they little pieces open up, and then at the end, the whole wall explodes, and there they are. It was really, really cool. So that's what Rolling Stone says were some of the 50 greatest concerts of the last 50 years. But I'd like to get a taste of what an Emily Armonetti has seen and what she considers some of her favorite concerts of her lifetime. So what are they?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so I think, like, I have, like, a top five.
Wow.
I mean, but I've seen so many that it's very, very hard.
Oh, yeah, this was very difficult. I thought I would only say five, and I wound up with about 40.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, it's too hard.
But just throw them down anyway.
And it's hard. It's hard to say, you know, yeah, it's hard. It's like, yeah. So I have this top five. Like, so how do I...
Well, just Give me
Letterman style?
Just give me your list.
You do it like a countdown?
Well, just name anyone. Just say this in no particular order. Just, you know.
Oh, in no particular order.
Or you want, okay, if you have a all-time favorite. What is happening here? Name your friggin' list. Jesus.
Okay, why don't you do your list?
Oh! No, go on. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. So I'll save my best for last. But
all right. Oh,
for sure, the best shows that I think I've seen live have to be so Prince at the Aragon Ballroom in 1998.
Nice.
And I've seen Prince. I was lucky enough to see Prince probably four times while he was alive. And that one, for sure, was the best show. And it was that's a great venue.
Yeah, I saw the Purple Rain Tour in 84, and then I saw him again in the early 2000s at the Allstate Arena. And that, he was amazing.
Yeah, he really was. Yeah, he was just electric live.
Yeah, he really is. And for being 3 feet tall, it's even crazier.
Right.
That he could, he had such a stage presence.
He is really tiny.
Yeah.
And he wears these really high-heeled boots. But he literally just goes flying on top of and off of, you know, amplifiers that are, like, stacked up on the side of the stage. It really was amazing.
Well, that's why they say that he probably wound up, he got addicted to the painkillers because he had really bad hip problems from doing all that jumping around on those heels.
Yeah, it is. It's really a shame, but yeah, he was for sure. I mean, he's in my top two. So he's there. Tony Bennett, Radio City Music Hall in 2013.
Nice.
This was such a great show. I was in the second row.
Wow.
I'm sure you've been to Radio City Music Hall. That's also a great venue to see someone at. But, you know, Tony Bennett, I mean, he was great. He sounded great. But I was also really impressed by his stage presence because this guy is like, at the time, I think he was in his late 80s.
Oh, yeah. He's just
really
turned, he's 91 now. Yeah.
Yeah. And you really can't believe the energy he has. So he for sure is in my top five.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy that you like my concert. All right.
You do a much better Tony Bennett than you do British accent.
All right.
That was actually pretty good.
Thank you, Emily Amonetti.
The other thing too, he is so cool though. He in all of his he does his chat, you know, in between songs, and he's exactly like that. He's just really cool.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I got a chance to. I did a story about him. About 25 years ago, and I got a chance to meet him backstage, and he was the nicest guy. All right, Toronto. That sounds Italian to me. That's right, Anthony Benedetto.
That sounds Italian.
That your ace is with me.
See, now I feel like I need to meet him because when I tell him that I'm an Armenette.
Oh, all right. That sounds Italian to me, too.
We'll see if I get the same thing.
That sounds Italian to me, too. Hey, did your family own liquor stores in Chicago?
Right.
Yeah. We should say that. I mean, it's not even a joke. Emily's family is the Armenetti Liquors that many people may remember.
Yeah.
And still is around.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So, well,
we don't own it anymore.
Right.
We're out of that business now. Everybody is retired, but.
Yeah, that's very cool.
My family that started that business.
But so those are really two cool choices.
Yeah. Okay. So my next one is a little bit off the beaten track, but I've seen him twice. Okay. But this is a performer who you'll probably be surprised by, but this was just unlike anything that I've ever seen. And that was David Byrne, 1997 at the Riviera.
Well, I'm not surprised because, I didn't see that. Now, was that when he's doing all that, kind of South American, like samba?
Yeah, he was promoting his solo album Feelings, which definitely had that kind of a vibe. And I was really into that album at the time, but I've always also been a Talking Heads fan.
Well, I have to give you one better because I saw the Stop Making Sense tour in 83. That was the last Talking Heads tour. I saw that at Poplar Creek. It was in 83. It was for the Speaking in Tongues album, but it became the movie Stop Making Sense. And if you've never seen that film, it's probably one of the best concert films in terms of not only the actual concert, but the way that it was directed by, sadly, the late Jonathan Demme, who just passed away.
Right.
But yeah. But yeah, David Byrne is a great performer. I'm so glad you have him on there. Because I feel the sad part about David Byrne is that because Talking Heads, you know, have not been a band for almost 30 years, if not more, you know, he's made his solo albums, but he's kind of been forgotten, and he is just one of the best performers, and I love his voice, and I love that vibe he has. I mean, all those Talking Heads songs all have that kind of, rhythmic foundation.
Yeah. Well, and I think also, like, now I feel like he's more into, like, doing different things, you know? Like, he did this whole color guard thing a few years ago where he was, like, really inspired by, like high school, like color guards, you know? And then the last time I saw him, I think he's like more into collaborating with interesting artists. Like the last time I saw him, it was in New York, and he was playing with St. Vincent.
Yeah. They did an album together.
I think he's not exactly. And so he's not, it's not Talking Heads level of, you know, notoriety.
Oh no, he's still around, but
I think he's kind of doing his thing, you know, he's just doing his thing.
No, he's still around, but I think he deserves to be much more recognized and appreciated than he has been over the last couple of years. Who else is on your list?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's underrated. Yeah. Okay, so my next one is, now this is really hard because it's like, what is our criteria for this? So I decided, like, what is a band that I saw that really struck.
Whoops, are you there? Hello? Did we lose Emily? Hello?
I sort of knew of them, but I didn't.
There she is.
Can you hear me?
Oh, you're going out. You were going out for a while there. Stay in one spot.
Oh, okay. Okay, so
we didn't hear what you said, so say it again.
Oh, okay. So this is a band that I kind of thought to myself, like, what is a live show that really stopped me in my tracks? And last fall at Austin City Limits, I saw a band called Haim.
ACL?
ACL, exactly. not to be confused with Southside.
Now, Haim is, I've heard of them.
I am impressed that you've heard of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, like we said, this list could be a mile long, but the reason that I'm putting Haim on this list is because seeing them live at ACL really kind of kicked off my obsession with them. Like, I sort of knew of them, but I didn't know their music that well, and I kind of wandered by their stage on my way somewhere else, and they really just stopped me in my tracks, and I was like, this is a band I need to get to know. They were just so cool, so energetic.
Well, look at you,
honestly,
hipster.
If you have a chance to see them, I wouldn't call myself a hipster per se. And like I said, I mean, they were not, it's not like they were not known. I mean, obviously they're known and I had heard a lot about them, but really, truly, if you have the chance to see them, I highly recommend it. So my last, and my number one,
right,
is Peter Gabriel, 1993 WOMAD Festival.
Deer nice. Creek. Where did you see him at?
Yeah.
Where did you
at
see
Deer
him?
Deer Creek.
Oh, okay.
Deer Creek in Indiana. But he was on the WOMAD. He was doing the WOMAD Festival.
Oh, right. Okay. I remember that. WOMAD, that was all the world music, right?
Yeah. And he was promoting, like, that was the, he was kind of like on his, like, secret world tour.
Oh, was that with the giant, was that with the giant ball?
Yeah, and
when he was in the clear ball.
So there's a live album, but it wasn't recorded at that specific show at Deer Creek, but it was recorded on that tour. But the set list was the same as what you know on the live album that what I saw at Deer Creek, and he was just amazing. I mean, and he had on that tour, he was touring with Paula Cole. She was his backup singer, and she was accompanying him, especially on some of the songs that he duets on. But at that particular show at Deer Creek, he brought out Sinead O'Connor to duet with him.
Oh, wow.
That was totally a surprise, totally unexpected.
Did they do Don't Give Up? What did they do?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
they did?
They did. They did. Don't give up. And she's saying In Your Eyes with him, too.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I'll tell you.
And it was just great.
That's so cool because, you know, we actually have a few things in common in that, you know, you chose David Byrne. One of mine was, like I said, 1983's, Speaking in Tongues, Talking Heads tour at Poplar Creek. One, like I said, I don't have these in any particular list, but one of my favorites of all time. I love Peter Gabriel, huge fan. I saw him in 83. This was before the So album, just before mm-hmm. it. And if you go and find the live album called Peter Gabriel Plays Live, that was the tour that album that I saw was recorded from. And it was an amazing.
Okay, so he was on your list already?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this was from 1983, and it was kind of the Shock the Monkey era. And in fact,
sure,
it was
yeah.
so cool. He had monkey bars. And when he sang
right
Shock, when he sang Shock the Monkey, he was swinging from the monkey bars.
Oh, right.
Because he was a lot better shape than he was when you saw him.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, that was a great, great concert. I have to say the first one I ever went to, obviously, was seeing Elton John at the Chicago Stadium in 1976 when he was really at the height of his powers. And it was just an amazing thing. And, you know, for me, I was this 12-year-old kid. This is somebody that I'd only seen on TV or on album covers. And I literally saw him in person there. And it was just an amazing kind of thing. I'm a huge Springsteen fan, obviously. The first time I saw him was in 1980. And that was one of the best.
He made the Rolling Stone list.
Yeah, he did, his 1978 tour. I've seen him I've seen him, more than 60 times. There's been several great concerts I've seen, including in tribute to him, the one in 2016 where he did the entire River album. It was an amazing concert here at the United Center. One of the coolest, absolute coolest concerts I have ever seen, and I can't think of anything ever being any better than this, was 1986, Elvis Costello, at the Riviera Theater. It was called the Amazing Spinning Songbook Concert. He had a Wheel of Fortune wheel. This huge, giant wheel. And there were all these songs, just like Wheel of Fortune. And he picked people from the audience. You spun the wheel, and whatever song it landed on, he played. And there were some of his originals. There were some cover versions. They had a little bar on the side of the stage, so whoever got picked out of the audience would sit on the stage at the bar and have a drink and listen to them play the song that landed.
Oh, that's very cool.
So it's so cool because, I mean, you had no idea what, you know, you could play, you know. Then there were some songs that had, you know, that were big, you know, well-known songs like Pump It Up and things like that. But there were other obscure ones on there, and no one knew what was going to happen. So every night was a different show. It was so creative, and it was so very cool. Then in 1994, I went to a Rainforest concert at Carnegie Hall. Sting and his wife still put on these concerts at Carnegie Hall to benefit the Rainforest. And one of the first ones was in 94. The original reason I went was because Elton was a part of it. Elton, Sting, and James Taylor were kind of like always the three that went, that were the main draws of these concerts for about 6 or 7 years. But this one year in 94, Pavarotti shows up and Whitney Houston shows up and they did a duet. They sang that song, La Donna Mobile, and she brought the house down. And Pavarotti.
That was amazing.
Pavarotti's looking at her like, whoa, what was that? I mean, it was so
like
cool.
Like in a good way or a
oh,
bad
yeah,
way?
Like, wow, this woman, oh, unbelievable. He bowed to her.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. And then I saw the first Farm Aid in 85. Which was very cool at the U of I. And not only did it have, you know, Mellencamp and Neil Young and Willie Nelson, but I forgot some of the bands that I saw that day. I went online to get the list, and I forgot that I saw Alabama, the Beach Boys, Bon Jovi, Glenn Campbell, Johnny Cash, Charlie Daniels Band, John Denver, Bob Dylan, John Fogerty, Foreigner, Arlo Guthrie, Sammy Hagar, Vince Gill, Merle Haggard, Daryl Hall, Emmylou Harris, Don Henley, Waylon Jennings, Billy Joel, Randy Newman, George Jones, Ricky Lee Jones, B.B. King, Carol King, Kris Kristofferson, Huey Lewis, Loretta Lynn, Roger McGuinn, Roger Miller, Joni Mitchell, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Charlie Pride, Bonnie Raitt, Lou Reed, Kenny Rogers, Brian Setzer, Sissy Spacek, Tanya Tucker, and Bob Dylan. I said that. I mean, that was on the bill at the first Farm Aid in 1985. Yeah. And I mentioned The Wall. I mentioned Leonard Cohen. And then a real cool thing, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony in 1994 at the Waldorf Astoria in New York. And the band got inducted. And so the original band got back together for the first time since they broke up in 75 or in 76. And Eric Clapton played with them. Which in
Eric,
because he said, I always wanted to be in the band, and I finally get to be in the band. So that was very cool too. And so those are just a few of mine. But I like the fact that we have kind of the same musical taste despite our age.
There's a lot of crossover, and yeah. I have to say I am very impressed that your entire list is not Elton shows.
Oh so, no, not at all. You
show tremendous restraint there.
No. In fact, like I said, I was tempted to do this. I said this in the last podcast, but I want to go back. I've got all of my ticket stubs that I've ever gone to, and I want to count how many shows I've been to, because I think I've been to at least I think I had to be at least 700 concerts.
I heard you talking about that on, I don't know if it was like last week's segment before I joined you. Now, I was wondering, what do you do now that they don't do the old school ticket stubs anymore? It's either just like you print it out at home.
Well, I keep the bad printed. I hate that. I hate that, but I keep the bad printed.
Yeah.
I fold it up, but I mean, I hate
so
that.
You keep those, okay.
Yeah, because I don't...
Stopped saving ticket stubs when they started.
I hate that. I mean, and of course, my flip phone, I can't just like show them like you do on a plane where you just.
Well, yes. For those of us in the 21st century, you have a mobile ticket.
Hey, you know what?
Show them. I just did that at Tom. I just did that last week at Tom Petty. My mobile phone.
Yeah. See that to me, that's fake. You got to have a ticket stub. Sorry. Got to have a ticket stub. Well, Emily, I'm so excited. I'm glad to see that we have we could actually go to some concerts together.
We could. Well, speaking of which, the Mellencamp Ravinia tickets went on sale this week, and I've got mine.
Oh,
so
you do?
I'm coming.
Well,
I'm coming
I write for the magazine, so I don't think I write for their magazine, so I don't think I'll need to get tickets.
Oh, okay. Well, then you call your connection.
Well, yeah, I'll take a look at that because, in fact,
it's official. I will be there. I've got my tickets.
When is the show? When is it?
So there are two shows at the end of August. I'm going to Saturday, August 26th.
Okay. Well, I will keep that open, and hopefully we can get back together. And it has been a while since we've seen
each other.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you, Emily. I appreciate it. A good list. I'm impressed.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, clear your throat, and we'll talk to you next week.
My throat is clear. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. Emily Amrinetti joining us for the Pop Culture Club here at the podcast. And that does end another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Hey, that was episode 52. 1 year of this. Thank you so much for supporting me if you're a listener. I appreciate it. We'll try for year number two starting next week. For now, just let me tell you that I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is the only podcast that goes from the end of the web to your screen.